Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Welcome to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on WAFS Atlanta's Biz 1190, streaming live on biz1190.com and podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes and a bunch of other places. Today's going to be part two of our interview with Rich Russikoff. Rich, one of the smartest guys I know in the field of business coaching. Been a long-time business coach, entrepreneur. Rich, welcome back to Driven to Business. Thank you for doing two programs with us.
It's my pleasure, Eddie. I love the opportunity of exchanging ideas with you and things, lessons learned along the way.
We spent a fair amount of time, in fact, in the last program, we spent a lot of time talking about sort of lessons learned type things, and you gave us a lot of advice about the secrets of buying, how a lot of businesses and the secrets of buying, about being flexible, seeing opportunities when they came along, and just sort of the role of a leader in the business as a coach, and also I think we ended the program by talking about some reality checks, and we had just begun talking in the last program about the importance of employees. That's something that's become so meaningful to me in later years. And I'll be honest with you, Rich, and you know this without me telling you, I've always considered myself a fairly nice person, but I always thought I knew how to manage and lead employees before I started a business, because I did it fairly successfully in another business. But when the pressures of my own business hit, I did find myself, and I made two mistakes. One of the mistakes was I probably did not treat some people as well as I should have treated them. And on the other hand, I probably put up with a lot of people I should not have put up with. So I sort of made mistakes on both sides of that coin. But we had talked about the idea, you ended the last program, we were talking a little bit about the idea that you you pay people, and you do need to pay people a good salary, but that's not all they're asking for. Sort of pick up on that conversation a little bit.
Okay, well, let's take a look at the fact that if somebody is doing a decent job working for you, they can probably get a very similar salary somewhere else.
Right.
So the salary is just one component of whether people stay or go. What's really important, and what the studies show, and what I see every day working with businesses all over the world, actually, is what's called psychic income. People want to know where they stand. And we could do a whole show on on evaluations of personnel, and why so many evaluations are terrible and are counterproductive.
Right.
Just to elaborate on that just a minute or two, people want to know where they stand, and the problem with evaluations are generally they're once a year.
Right.
The person giving the evaluation dreads doing it. It really, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is, am I going to get a raise or not?
Right.
So it's not truly an evaluation of the performance of someone. And if you and I sit down and I'm expecting a raise, and now you tell me I'm not going to get a raise because of something I did 6 months ago.
Exactly.
That sets for a terrible tone. So I'm a believer, and by the way, on my website, I think I have, and if I don't, I'll make it available to your listeners, how to manage people for fun and profit.
And that website, by the way, is coachtothebest.com. That's where that is,
yes.
coachtothebest.com.
And I believe that you should let people know where they stand four times a year. And you should create specific characteristics of the job that you're looking for. And I think on this article, I talked about, as an example, a franchise I worked with that was in the framing business. framing up pictures.
Right.
So you have people working in the front who sell and who upsell and who make customers happy. And you have people in the back room who have totally different skills.
Right.
And, for example, it's very interesting in that particular business, part of how you make your money is how many cuts you get out of a piece of wood that's going to be the molding for a frame.
Right.
So what are the characteristics and skills for each? And then you ask people to do their own personal evaluation of themselves on skills and behaviors that they already know is how you're determining performance. And then you can put down your own evaluation alongside of it. So let's say somebody, pick Eddie for me, something that you look for in a person, and if they and think of somebody, if they're falling down on it, what it might be, and I'll use that as an example.
Well, let's just say a technician who needs to have better customer skills and who is not quite, who does a good job technically, but is not as friendly to customers as they should be.
Okay, so let's assume they evaluate themselves here, and it's on a 10 is wonderful, 1 is terrible. And they evaluate themselves as a 5 with customer service.
Right.
And what I generally find is people are harder on themselves than you'll be on them.
Right.
So let's say you agree that it's a 5. So now, instead of being the cop, you can be the coach. And you can say to them, do you want to stay a 5? Do you want to go to a 7 or an 8 between now and the next 13 weeks or the next quarter? And they say, yes, they want to grow. And if they don't want to grow in that, that's a real indicator. But
right.
Most people will say, yes, they want to improve that. So let's take a look at what are the things that has to happen that are measurable for you to become a better customer service related person. So now you come up with a criteria and you become the coach to help them get there. And it helps people grow. They know where they stand. They see the measurable results, and then you can continue to grow that. So that's the concept that I like in determining how you can coach people rather than being the cop. Most people like helping people. The difficulty is when you have to be the cop.
I agree. You know, that's a good point you made in the very beginning about this, because I was thinking to myself when you said this. I think employees may dread getting an evaluation. I don't know that all employees realize how much the person in charge dreads giving it as well. Because
yes.
I have a good friend here in town that's actually had two very successful businesses. One of them, he's been a guest on the program, Heinz Wagner. One of them was a company that went public and became a very, very large company, and he decided he didn't like managing that, and he left and formed another company. It's a very high-tech company that makes satellite communication equipment. And he said when he formed his second company, what he wanted to keep small, he'd already made had been very successful in the large company. He was telling me they do no evaluations, and I was asking him how you get by with that, and he said every evaluation I ever did or was part of it, I think he's just talking about what you were saying right there. He said it was always ended up being negative. He said even when I thought somebody was doing a good job, it ended up feeling like it was negative. And he said I didn't like that. So when I hire people now, I tell them we're not going to do evaluations. I'm not evaluating you. Just do a good job. And he's been, this is again a very small company he's got built now, although they've built up to about 20 people now. But I'm not suggesting anybody do that. But what I am saying is that points out how people dread doing that. They don't like it. Nobody likes doing it.
Yeah, and if you have to face the danger, I believe. And if you're doing it wrong, I mean, if you're getting a negative out of something that could and should be a positive,
right,
then you're falling into a trap, and you're doing it wrong.
You know, I used to find, I don't do this anymore, but I used to, you know, there's always on evaluations, always like, what are their strengths? And then there's usually the next question, of course, is what are their weaknesses? I used to literally feel like I had to invent something to put there, you know, which is absurd. But, you know, even when a guy's, you really just are very pleased with the person, okay, well, you're weak in, you come up with something. And, you know, the only thing they hear out of that is the weak, they don't hear anything else. Oh, he said I wasn't a good whatever, you know, I wasn't a good people person or something. And it does have this negative connotation that's absurd. And like you said, you're not getting out of it what you wanted to. You got a great employee. You wanted to tell them they're great. You don't. That's it.
Forget weaknesses. How about how can we grow?
Right.
That's really the essence of it. Where are there areas for growth? And people want to improve. They want to know where they stand, and they want to know opportunities for improvement and training and growth as a fundamental to people wanting to stay with a company.
I think you're exactly right. Yeah, you know, a long time ago, we were all told, and it is true, that, you know, companies rarely stand still. They're either growing or they're going backwards. I used to wonder about that a lot because I would hear that, but there seemed to be no metrics put. There seemed to be no reasons put with that. Richard, I've kind of come to decide in my own mind after that, the reason that happens is because if you're not growing, you're only attracting and keeping people who are not growth-oriented. Growth-oriented people are going to not want to be around a business that's not growing, and consequently, you're going to sort of have a filter there. And then what happens then is you absolutely begin, as the pro-growth people leave, you do begin to start sliding backwards. And I think that's exactly what happens. I think it's not any more scientific than that as to why you have to grow.
People want economic security, and they want emotional security. And one of the things I like to ask is, why can't you manage the status quo? Why can't you keep the status quo? And the answer to the question is, there is no status quo.
That's exactly, in today's world especially, you're exactly right. Rich, a lot more to come on Driven to Business. Great guest today, Rich Russikoff. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Back in just a moment. Hang around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest today is Rich Russikoff, business coach. You can find Rich's information at coachtothebest.com. Go there and check him out. Also, if you forget that, links to Rich will be on eddiemayfield.com. The next program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. And we are, as you know, streaming live on biz1190.com if you happen to be driving out of our coverage area. Rich, you work with a lot of entrepreneurs, me being one of them, and as you doubtless know, and I'll just hang my own self out to dry here, many of us find the finance side of the business rather exasperating. So if you want to yell at us about that, this is your chance.
Well, I'd rather just encourage to understand the importance of it. The top line, I believe, is for ego.
Yeah.
The bottom line is how savvy entrepreneurs keep score. And more importantly, it's not what you make, but what you keep.
Right.
And so it's critically important that you have the lifeline or the blood of your business, which is capital, to sustain, to grow, and to cover yourself during hard times. And there's always hard times.
Right. You know, I've got a very good friend who's a retired business executive from Delta Airlines, as a matter of fact, and he has a saying that out of cash is out of business. And I think that's a very good mantra for people to put in the back of their minds and keep there. You know, the day you run out of cash, no matter how sharp you are, is the day you're not in business, because you're not going to have employees. You're not going to have, nobody's going to sell you anything. You're not going to be able to pay your rent. You're not going to drive a car. I mean, it's all going to stop.
And here's what's really scary. Companies that are successful they grow to the point where their payroll is $100,000 a month,
right,
where their rents are very high, they've got a nut they've got to meet
right.
every month. And you go 2 to 3 months without meeting that nut in many business operations with low margins, which can happen for a whole host of reasons, and you not only can be out of business, but in debt for the rest of your life.
Right. Rich, you know, one of the things that you and I did together some years ago was that we had a very, you may remember this, we had a very large project it's a great project to have. We made a lot of money on it and all that. But after that project ended with the company, we were losing money, and I just could not seem to figure it out because we had been making money before, and it's like, you know, our billings were up in the level where we had always made money, but we were losing it, and I just couldn't figure it out. And I remember you and I sitting down and going over and over and over our financials, just digging deeper and deeper and deeper into it. And what had happened was that I had allowed our cost to creep up during that large project that was sort of masking everything. We were making a lot of money off that project. And I let our base costs and our costs of doing business sort of creep up there almost incrementally, but without me knowing about it, because this project took a couple of years to do. And when that project ended, all of a sudden we were exposed with this rather this unmanageable business load that our present billings wouldn't support. And it was hard. It was very hard to figure that out. And once we figured it out, we knew what we had to do. It wasn't fun. I had to start making some serious cuts to get back down to get our business costs back down in line. But I don't know that I'm that unusual. I had told myself I was not going to let that happen when I got the project. That's what I told myself. But I still did. And I think, again, it comes back to not having, perhaps having the clarity in the financial statements I should have had to show me that, because it was sort of masking it. It's all mixing together and masking things there.
Yes, that's what we spoke about that a little bit in the last session we did. First of all, that's called margin creep.
Right.
And if you were to break out certain profit centers like this job, then you would see where are you without it and what do you need to do by way of top line revenue or by really focusing on your expenses to make things like that not happen. You know, we're in an interesting place right now. We're coming into the end of the year.
Right.
And many people will be in situations where they'll be renewing insurance and telephones and things like that. And there are a lot of hidden expenses there.
Right.
That you need to take a look at. I have a client I work with actually since the year 2000. And 2 years ago, there was a break-in in his warehouse. They think it was an inside job. $100,000 worth of equipment were taken. And his first thought was, thank God, I'm covered. And then he submitted the loss to the insurance company, and the insurance company said, well, where's the videotape of all the things that were in the warehouse? He said, I don't have any. He says, well, if you'll check the contract, it says that you should. So we're not responsible.
Wow.
And the thing, here's what I would recommend to avoid that. Shop these things. Go to two, even if you love your insurance company, go to two or three other insurance adjusters, or not adjusters, but insurance brokers,
right,
and say, take a look at my policy. What can you do better? They'll be able to tell you where the holes are, just from a standpoint of trying to be competitive.
You know, Rich, we actually ran into that. I didn't have a loss, thank goodness. We caught it before then, but we got suspicious about our insurance. Just a few things we began reading there that didn't seem to jive up with what we thought we had. And then we had a very small claim on some things that we just couldn't get paid. We couldn't understand why wouldn't that be paid. Well, we began digging into it, and we found out we had been sold a very wrong kind of insurance for what we do didn't cover, literally. No, we were not. I thought those years we were covered, or for a year or two, we'd been covered by all this stuff. You know, thank the Lord, we didn't have a major loss. But it's the same thing. You really have got to watch that. And then, now of course, we dumped that insurance. We dumped the whole broker and everybody, and went with another person. But it's a frightening wake up call about, man, if something had happened here, we'd really been in trouble. You know, it would have sunk the company actually had that happened.
Yeah, risk management is a critical component. When you talk about things we don't pay attention to,
right?
I have a client right now who has terrific intellectual property. And it's a software. And I've been trying to get him to make sure that he's taken the legal steps so no one can poach it.
Right.
And he hasn't done it yet. And I don't want to be right. I don't want somebody to poach it. But whenever you have intellectual capital, you want to protect that. There are so many things we need to do to protect. For example, in your business, Eddie, you bring somebody in, you train them, they have the skills, and then they leave you. Well, non-competes have little or no value,
right,
if you go to court.
Right.
So part of that is knowing those things as well, and what you need to do to protect yourself, and having really viable, good financial information, and sitting down with your financial people and looking at things that you might not see. I'll give you an example with my first business.
About 30 seconds here, Rich. We've got to go for a break here.
Okay, so let's come back to, what are the things you should listen for and why?
I'll agree with that. You know, one thing here in Georgia, because, as you know, we're the headquarters of Coca-Cola, Georgia has pretty strong trade secret laws. And so actually entrepreneurs here, if you structure it correctly, you are a little more protected than you are in some states because of just the history of Georgia here in trade secrets. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest is Rich Russikoff. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest again today is Rich Russikoff. Rich is with CoachToTheBest.com. Check him out there. Rich is a very experienced business coach. I think you can email him at rich@CoachToTheBest.com, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Rich, before the break, we were talking about protecting intellectual properties and things of that sort. I wonder if you had anything else you want to add about that.
Well, just how critically important it is, and just like, you know, finding out with insurance where you're covered, make sure, don't make the assumptions that somebody can't take your intellectual property. And there are poachers out there that make a pretty good living of suing you for your intellectual
right.
property
right.
by saying that it was theirs to begin with.
Right.
There are so many ways you can be blindsided in business that it's important to cover yourself. Eddie, I want to throw something out that I think would be interesting. Here are the four most important people I think you need to have in a growing company, say at least over half, doing over at least $500,000 a year. One, as the CEO, you need to know your role, which is visionary, bringing the right people together, getting the capital to make the company grow, getting feedback from the marketplace, establishing great relations, managing the financial side of your business, looking for opportunities, and most importantly, the ability to execute and lead by example, because you get more of the behavior that you exhibit and you tolerate. So that's the CEO's job description. And I have a seminar on this. And if you'd like for us to figure out how your people can get information on this, I'd be very happy to do that.
Okay.
The second most important role is an operations person. And an operations person is to make sure the trains are going, to be able to implement your vision on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
The third most important person is the right financial person who's giving you real-time, accurate information that you're looking at and understand with percentages alongside that information. When I look at financial statements and they're done by some computer program, and the first item under expenses is accounting, and the next item is advertising, and the next line item is auto expense, it's done alphabeticalized, right, right. And it doesn't have percentages alongside of you. I want to see all the marketing expenses together. I want to see and what the percentages to sales are.
Right.
I want to see the cost of goods and percentages of sales by profit center. I want to see what are the cost for the sales force and commissions of the company by percentage. Break things down so that you can really look and quickly spot trends. And the right financial person doing the right things will enable you to see that. And that's critically important as you grow.
Right.
So what do you think? Well, I won't say what do you think. The next, when I throw this out at seminars, what's the next most important position for a CEO in a company or an entrepreneur? A lot of people miss this one, and I look forward to that so I can fill it in. And that is an administrative assistant. Someone whose job it is to keep your promises, to make sure you don't get caught in the thick of thin stuff, and to follow through on things for you, to manage your calendar, to make sure that you're getting done the things that need to be done and that bring things to you. I had this discussion with a client a while back, and he said, Rich, when you shared it with me, I knew you were right, but I didn't act until someone else said to me, if you don't have an administrative assistant, then you're your own administrative assistant.
And a lot of us are pretty crummy at that.
Yes. Yes. So that person that it enables you to get things done, to make sure things are covered, to follow up on things for you, having that right person in place is incredibly important.
You know, you could do an entire program, I think, and I know there have been books written on it, and you've talked about it a lot of times in speeches and so forth, of the transition between, you know, when someone starts a business and they, and for a variety of reasons, if you start sort of bootstrap a business up, you're kind of doing everything because out of necessity. You don't really have a lot of people. As you begin, though, to be successful and grow, you have to spread that out. And one of the dangers I think that anybody can run into is that when you is refusing to let go, where you in fact want to be the CEO and the operations guy and the financial person and the admin person all yourself, and you don't develop a trust relationship with other people, and you don't develop people to do that. And it, you know, that's okay if you intend on remaining a one person show all your life. That's okay. But if you don't intend to do that, then those things, I don't think anyone that's ever gone through that, me or anyone else, has found that particularly seamless or easy to do.
It's not. There's so many lessons to learn along the way in terms of managing people and leading. And many of us are really good leaders, but we're terrible as managing people.
Right.
I had a client once. He used to walk through his warehouse, talk to 10 people, and make 11 people angry. And he knew it. He knew he was but as a leader, people would follow him. But day-to-day management, he was terrible. And it took us a couple years to get the right person in place. And I would say to him, if you talk to people, your job is to tell people they're doing a terrific job, how much you appreciate them, and if you're upset about something they're doing, go to the general manager or COO and let them take care of it, because their skills should be people management as much as anything else.
You know, one of the roles I fell into for the company that I worked for before was that we were owned by two guys. One of them, a very, very people-oriented person, but he was on the road a lot. The other guy, kind of the engineering side of it, was not a very, very smart guy, very hard-driven guy. Everybody had a lot of respect for his business acumen and engineering skills and so forth. But he's the epitome of what you talked about. He'd go walking around and make everybody he talked to mad, because he's just one of these kind of people that just had no idea. And he got along with nobody, seemingly, except me. So he promoted me, and I became that person that was between him. And things actually got a lot better, because he would yell at me a little bit. He didn't yell at me much. He was fairly kind to me, but not to anybody else. And he was smart enough to figure that out. So what he would start doing is say, "You go over and what he would tell me to tell the guy, I'm going to not phrase that exactly as he put it when I get out there. It's going to be a little milder when I get there. And I would talk him out of things, too. Let's don't fire that guy. Let's do this." But again, I think smart guys, and he was one, and they've been very, very, very successful. You figure that out. I mean, you know, it's all money. You want to go around and make people mad and lose money, or don't you? I mean, that's what you can get down to.
Remember once with this particular fellow I was talking about, where he had gone on the road, and they had the people in the company said, "We need another layer," and he hired two people that were being paid for the first time. People in his company, he had two people making six-figure salaries. He said, "I'm going on a buying trip. I'll be gone a month. Here are the new people. Train them." The word got out about their salary. And I got a call from one of the people that worked for him saying, "Everybody's very upset. They found out what these people are doing. Here we are having to train them." And I happened to catch the CEO literally getting off the plane when he came back to the States. And he said to me, "What do you think I should do?" And I said, "Here's what I think you should do. I think you should hold a meeting with the four or five people that basically are in that other level and talk to them about what's happening and why." So he said he would. And I happened to reach him right before he had the meeting with them, by chance, the next day. And I said, "What are you going to do?" He said, "I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to say to them, if you don't like it, you can leave." I said to him, "Brilliant. That's wonderful. Right before a major furniture show at High Point, let's make everybody upset and lose people. I love it." The sarcasm worked with him.
Yeah.
So he said, "Okay, Rich, what should I do?" I said, "I want you to go in the meeting, and I want you to ask the people what's bothering them. And then as soon as they get done, the next thing I want you to say is there anything else? And listen. And then say, and what would you like me to do? And then say, give me a day to think about it." So what happened was, they just wanted to vent.
Right.
They just wanted his ear. And that was it. It all blew away. It's the same thing with customer service. When a customer calls in angry, let them vent.
Right.
People want to be listened to. Get the idea out. And the whole thing blew away. And they were a stronger group as a result.
That's a great point. I think in people relations generally, is let them talk. You know, there's the old, I know you've heard of this before, the old negotiating tact of, when someone's complaining to you, listen to them very, very politely, and they're venting at you. And then you basically say back and say, "So if I understand," and you basically say back what they said to you, which is going to sound a lot meaner when they hear it coming from you than they heard it coming from them. They're going to say, "Well, no, I don't think we should kill the guy, maybe. I think we should just..."
Eddie, what you're just talking about is called paraphrasing.
Right.
And paraphrasing in any situation shows people you're listening.
That's a good point. Again, going back to that thing that people do want to be listening. Again, that sort of psychic income you were talking about earlier. Richie, again, as I've said several times, you're a great guest. I'm so glad to talk to you. More to come on Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Keep in mind, we're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business, a final segment of today. Great guest today. I hope you've been listening, Rich Russikoff. By the way, again, you can find Rich at coachtothebest.com. There will also be links to Rich on eddiemayfield.com. And today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. So tell your friends and get a repeat of it. Rich, we were talking right before the break just about this idea of as you termed, psychic income, or really it's just customer, it's just people relations, isn't it? You know, the older I get, and as you know, I'm getting pretty old now. I'm glad you didn't comment on that. Getting much older, but the relationships trump everything, really, in business, don't they?
Yes, you are in the business, first of all, just in terms of the people. You're in the business of hiring, requiring, inspiring, firing, training, and communicating.
Right.
Now you have all these other stakeholders. Where are you getting your financing from? Your banking relationship, your community relationship, your vendor relationships. All of these things are critically important. And, you know, you can't underestimate the importance of vendors
right.
and how they help
right.
you grow. So it's customers, it's all these things that make a difference. Your relationship with your landlord, if you have one, all these things are so critically important. And that's what great entrepreneurs do. They establish relationships. They have a dream. They have an idea that you know, the old joke that Martin Luther King didn't say, I have a strategic plan.
You're right.
he said, I have a dream. And people bought into him. They believed in him. And great CEOs and entrepreneurs, people say, I want to be a part of this. I like what this person is doing. I like this person. And then it's up to you to follow through and to keep those relationships and nurture those relationships. Look how long we've had a relationship, Eddie.
Right.
It goes back a long way.
Exactly. Rich, you've been in this business a long time, in the business of coaching and guiding businesses and entrepreneurs. If I were to ask you, is there anything in all those years that surprised you, or at least what's the most surprising thing that's happened to you in all that time as you've run across?
Well, I let's take a look at what's different today than when I first started out. And what I see that really surprises me with younger entrepreneurs, they tend to be serial entrepreneurs.
Hmm.
Used to be you have a business. Now it's the second business and the third business and the fourth business. And I think there's a couple reasons for it. Some of them may be good. Some of them may not be. You get tired and bored and you want to do something else. You want a new romance. And you take your eye off the ball on one to go do another business. But some people are really good at serial entrepreneurship.
Right.
It just means they also know to be successful, they have to put the right team in place to make it happen.
Right.
So that's one of the biggest surprises. The other big surprise is the whole world of venture capital and angel financing, and
right.
now even crowdfunding, where there are so many additional ways to get capital for growth. And I have a tendency to stay away from startups because, for one thing, they don't necessarily know what they don't know yet,
right.
and they can't recognize value, but I think when I say value, the value of one type of advice over another, because they haven't had the experience. But also, I think the two worst things that can happen when you start a business is, one, not having enough money, and two, having too much money.
Good point. That's a good point.
Because if you have too much money, what tends to happen, chances are it's not yours. So if you're giving up equity, which is very expensive money to give up, and then you don't spend it properly, that's lost.
Right.
Or if you're in debt and you're not investing the money smartly because you don't know yet what really works or where to put your money,
right?
That's lost too. And then you get to a certain point and you run out of money, and the earning curve is not quite caught up to the learning curve, and you're gone, you're broke. So the ability to raise money in today's times, actually, with all the things people say about banks, the money is out there, and many times people will pay more for invest more for an idea before it starts than they will once the business starts, because that's when the rubber meets the road.
Right.
And you find out, well, this is what we really can do.
You know, you're talking in today's world. I often think that, and I'm around a lot of people that seem to me to keep looking backwards. They sort of are yearning for the good old days of the 90s or something. And I always tell them that, you know, we're living where we live now, and we're in the times we're in now, and they're not bad or good. They just are. It's how we are. And this is normal now. We're in the normal. This is it. We're not going back to the 90s. You know, the technological genies are not going back in the bottle. They are where they are. And we have to not only survive, we have to thrive today in today's economy. And you'd mentioned banking or whatever it is. That we've got to do it now is where we are.
Yeah,
I actually think these are great times to be in business. I think these are incredible times.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's so much easier to target a market today.
Yes, it is.
To find out where you should put your focus, to find out. LinkedIn is such a marvelous vehicle for LinkedIn.
Yep.
Is for business connectors what Facebook is for mom, pop, and friends.
You're right.
There's so many ways to leverage the whole concept of branding, and there's almost an equalizer where somebody can come out with a product and actually be competing with Coca-Cola.
Yes, exactly. You know, even the business that we're in now in our businesses, not to get too technical about it, but we went from concentrating on low voltage variable frequency drives, 480 volts, stuff like that, up to medium voltage drives. Well, in before the communication vehicles and internet that we have available to us now, I don't know how in the world I would ever have found our prospects for that, or how the ones looking for a vendor would find us. And I don't know how you could possibly do that. So I'm very glad that we have this connected world we have now. Again, it's different than it used to be. That's life. You know, things change. You know what doesn't change, though? You've been talking about the whole program here. The core principles of business don't really change, do they? The building relationships and managing, you know, the buying at the right price, selling at the right price, knowing what your margins are, knowing your own strengths and weaknesses, being a learner, staying humble enough to learn, and helping people grow. That doesn't change at all, does it? No matter what the technological gains have been.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. That's pretty standard. But you just brought up a point, Eddie, that I've been sharing. You know, I have this seminar I do. It's called the CEO Checklist: How Savvy Entrepreneurs Survive and Prosper. And I took the word survive, and I used to say the S was staying power and the U was a sense of urgency.
Right.
But in the last couple years, I've had some revelations with some things that I've learned. There's a book by a man by the name of Gay Hendricks called The Big Leap. And I'd strongly recommend anybody read it, particularly entrepreneurs. Yeah. And it's Gay Hendricks, The Big Leap. Yeah. And I took it on vacation with me about 10 months ago, and it really helped me crystallize my focus for the next decade.
Thank you for coming on the program. You're a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on. And a very, very knowledgeable guy. And I wish you the best in your future endeavors. Look forward to a continued long relationship with you. And I appreciate you coming on the program today.
My pleasure, Eddie.
You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.